back nice and easy, Evan, with this music. Pour myself some tea and just calm down after all this crazy news. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. I am joined by Kristen Lighty, union organizer and comedian. How often do you meet people who have those two titles?
There's one other person I know in the country, and that's Nate O'Green in San Francisco.
All right. Yeah, it's a little bit of a unicorn, I would imagine. Do you guys have similar jokes?
No, surprisingly not. He does work with W. Kamau Bell quite a bit.
Love him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's great. Well, we are speaking of you being a union organizer. I wanted how you live in a state where unions were gutted, but I feel like the common objections or criticisms of unions. And I'd love to hear, as an organizer, how you typically respond to them if you come up against them in a debate. And so at least the ones I typically hear about is, you know, forcing people to pay dues or fees that they don't want to pay because they don't feel like they get enough out of the union and that they don't feel like they should have to pay those.
Yeah. And, you know, when we had closed shops, meaning that everyone was in the union no matter what, we did hear that quite a bit. But union dues are just your fee that you pitch in a little bit so we can run as an organization, really. I mean, that's paying my salary so you can have staff, so you can have someone to call when you're in a panic. Or it's also so that we can pay for lawyers to help us with our cases. We can pay for organizers. We can put money into political campaigns that help public education. I mean, we are not like... That was the big problem when the Supreme Court decision came out that said corporations can give just as much money and so can unions. And it's like, well, we don't have buckets of money. We run on very tight budgets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not to say that there are some unions out there that do put way too much money into their leadership and give
union and give presidents. A lot of money to campaigns still. I mean, I don't think it's quite as much as it used to be because unions
it's nowhere
themselves.
Near yeah. as much as a corporation would give. But most unions, like the union I work for, if you don't want to contribute to political funds, you can get that $25 back a year. I mean, that's it. That's out of all your dues. That's what's going to political campaigns. But it's that idea of like everybody giving a little bit so we can collectively advocate together.
Got it.
And like you pay for insurance, right? You pay for insurance on your house, your car. Why not for your profession?
That's a very good point. All right. So then the big one, I think, you hear from a lot of people, whether they've worked in a union or they've been a employer or just hearsay of how their spouse or whatever, is that in union shops, it is hard to reward good workers in order to promote them. And it's also very hard to lay off bad ones. And so how do you typically approach this conversation when people say that's what's wrong with unions is lazy, bad employees get protected?
Yeah, we get that a lot. I mean, ultimately, it's management's decision whether to hire or fire someone. So like to say that the union has power in making that decision is kind of silly. But the union is there to protect the process and make sure everyone gets a fair shake. So it might look like we're protecting bad employees, but actually that's protecting the process. So that employee is able to show exactly what went wrong or what happened so that you would have that opportunity in the future too, should you need it.
All right. So I guess that's different. Maybe this is just a bad rumor or assumption is that there's just certain, like there has to be a certain amount of documentation or like the obstacles in place to protect like a bad, because we're talking about teachers unions, like a bad teacher. And so where does that presumption come from as far as how bad teachers get protected and you can't fire them? Like, why is that such a assumption on so many people's part?
Well, I think it's actually a national assumption and it's just one of the many tools that union busters use. So I wouldn't say it's particular to teachers. You know, there's like a full list of how they try to indoctrinate people to act against their own best interests.
Yeah, that is
true. I mean, one is definitely the money. That's the most prevalent. It's like, when does an employer ever care about how you spend your money? But suddenly when you're talking about forming or joining a union, then it's, oh my gosh, your money. Like, no.
Yeah. So that's how, I mean, I guess I could probably list off other ones, but I always feel like those are the big ones. It's mm-hmm. So in your, obviously you have a point of view on this because this is your work, but so most of the objections that you end up hearing are not real in the sense that they're not something that the unions are actually dealing with so much as they are fabrications from the people who don't want groups of people to unionize.
I would say so. Because honestly, like, to join WEAC, I believe each local has their own set dues, but it's roughly $50 to $60 a month, which is like $13 a week. When like I was
how much I spend on all my streaming services,
right? And when I was working with retail workers in Chicago, they paid more in dues. So to hear that, like, oh, it's just too much money, is kind of like, okay, well, sure.
All right. Well, then, do you feel? Because I've had this, I feel like we're getting more headlines and news stories, both in Wisconsin, but also nationwide, of more and more groups trying to unionize and also being successful. So in Milwaukee, we have Colectivo, which actually also is, they have Chicago locations, which is the coffee shops that last year, despite I think Colectivo's management has often presented as pretty liberal and progressive, but they very much
boss is a boss.
Yeah, they very much did not want their workers to unionize, and I think they're still weirdly fighting it. Or like, so that's happening. More recently in Milwaukee, the Pabst Theater Group, which is like Riverside Pabst Theater. What else do they own? I think they own a couple more places, but their workers decided to unionize, and I think there's been less. They did push it to a vote, and then the vote went through, and I think Gary Witt and the management there is not being as obstructionist as Colectivo. But more famously is Amazon and Starbucks. And I've thought about this because we've seen, certainly in our lifetime, maybe it started even before we were born, the decline of unions. But with the labor shortage that we've had coming out of COVID, there's been more and more stories about groups of people starting to unionize. So do you feel like unions are making a comeback?
I do. Because if you look at when unions really started to decline in this country, it's when we built a very strong middle class and people felt they had a lot to lose. And then there was also the Red Scares to kind of put the kibosh on any, radical union organizing. And I think we've reached a point in our economy where people don't have much to lose and they're working 2, 3, 4 jobs. People are working full time, still living in poverty. People are tied to their employer for healthcare, which isn't any good. Most employers try to keep people at part-time wages so that they don't have to provide benefits. And we're seeing this just collapse and people need something. So I think unions do provide that hope because, my God, what else are we going to do?
Yeah. And it also seems like there's not as much to lose, but there's also the environment in which, you know, say who's like the most anti-union, like Menards, John Menard, right, is notoriously like he'd rather shut his place down than let his workers unionize. And but like that, if he continues to lose workers and people quit and they go to, you know, other home improvement stores, does that, like, it's one thing to say it and another thing to get to the point where you're like, I don't have enough people to work. And so it's, how much is it also just because of the environment of people have more, I don't know if it's because people have more options now, but especially service industry, public sector, jobs that historically are hard, either because they're hard because they're physically, there's physical labor involved. There is, if you're a teacher, having to deal with parents involved, all these things. And they also don't pay well. And so people are leaving. I mean, people, teachers, like droves of teachers have just quit. And this was already in Wisconsin when we were like hitting a cliff of having a teacher shortage. And now I'm sure we've only sped that up more. And so And so it's like it's one thing that there's not as much to lose, but it's another thing just because there is a political power almost because declining populations and other work options? And how much have you seen that play into, you know, a growing movement?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the economy of work is built on a promise that if I come in and I give you my time, you will take care of me and I will feel a sense of loyalty, right? Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely been disregarded. I mean, most employers are at will, so they can fire you whenever they want. We've seen a huge influx of just-in-time management styles, meaning you'll be on call to work at a grocery store, you know? So it's like making people scrounge for shifts. And I think people have just realized they want and they demand better, especially like the generation, the younger generation, Gen Z, coming in and seeing all this for the mess it is and pointing it out. Like, I love them. I think they're amazing.
Any time on TikTok, you're like constantly impressed by 19-year-olds who are much smarter than I am.
But I actually host Zoom sessions for people who reach out to me on Twitter who are interested in forming a union, because it's a purposely suppressed history, because no matter how progressive your boss is, they don't want to deal with a union. You know, that's giving up power, giving up money, decision-making. There's no boss in the world, I think, that would be like, yeah, start a union. That's great. So I think it's really important to teach as many people as we can how you do this work and how you get to elections and how you build a first contract, because it's truly democratizing your workplace.
What industries do you think are ripe for unionizing? Like who maybe historically haven't been, but you feel like, oh, like this, it would make a lot of sense if they started to have collective power.
Well, I think the movement is spot on in going after Amazon, Walmart, Target, you know, your large multinational corporations that are service work, because service work can't be exported. You need it. I believe all work has value, but people want to somehow discredit it and say that it's for teenagers and the elderly, but it still needs to be done. And these corporations are making billions of dollars. And they're sucking the wealth out of our communities because they get incentives from developers to open their stores. So not only are they undercutting their employees, they're not paying their fair share of taxes and they're getting money just to open the store. So I really feel like the labor movement is moving in the right direction. Like that's what I was advocating for 15 years ago. And people would just like openly laugh at me about like $15 an hour minimum wage. And now all these companies want to like pat themselves on the back. Like, we're doing it. I'm like, yeah, that's what we were asking for 10 years ago. So, okay.
Keep up. That's the thing I feel like people often forget is that one of the biggest welfare recipient makers is Walmart. That they, because they keep people at part-time, because they don't have benefits. So a lot of people who are working and who actually would like to work more are suppressed and thus then rely on the government and subsidies from like different programs, whether it's SNAP or Badger Care or, you know, where, depending on where you live. And so I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily make that connection of, well, if you don't pay people, then they're going to rely on the government, like welfare programs that you also say that you hate so much. So then
absolutely,
you should be in favor of, if you're going to think that you're entitled to have a business, your business needs to be able to afford to pay people a living wage.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the millions to billions of dollars they get in tax incentives just to open their doors is mind blowing. That's money that should be going to blighted communities.
Yeah. Foxconn.
I could talk about that all day. Missing ballots are with the Foxconn jobs.
I walk by in downtown Milwaukee. There's just an empty, like a Foxconn building that still has the logo out in the front. And I walk by and I'm like, is there anyone in there? But c'est la vie. All right. Well, we are almost at the end of the show. And so when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Green Bay and some of the good and the bad. Because you guys got actually a pretty good score for the human rights campaign. And so I would love to hear more about a good news. Let's end on a high note. All right, when we come back, this is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.